Hello, everyone, and welcome into Debate Night. First one of the season with Brody on the road. Brody's out in Vegas. Today was a travel day, which made it a little bit more chaotic, which is why we're starting here a few minutes late. But it is what it is. We're here. And not only are we're here on YouTube and we're on Facebook. So if you're watching on Facebook for the first time tonight, thanks so much for tuning in. Hopefully this all works out. We picked a rather fun night to try a bunch of new stuff. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, thanks all for tuning in. Got a pretty good show, pretty quick show. I'm not sure if we're going to pop over. I don't think we're going to do any Twitter spaces, and we're not going to be able to do Discord either tonight. So no call-ins, just Brody and I, but we have a few things we might debate on. Starting off with a decision that Brody was pretty upset with me in the moment of, and now in retrospect, I need to apologize for, which was the Super Bowl coming down the wire. I basically had two bets happening.
Oh, yeah.
One was the Bengals money line. That's where my focus should have been. The other one was a parlay that I needed points because I had the over and the second half over in. Coming down to the wire, everyone in there had the Bengals money line. For the good of the team, that's what should have been rooted for. Coming down to the wire, though, I shifted the energy of the room to root for the Rams to score because I needed the Rams to score, and then I needed Jamar Chase to score a touchdown for the Bengals to win in order for everything to hit. It was a perfect scenario. And yeah, I shifted the energy of the room, you know, brought some bad vibes in, and the Rams scored. And then obviously, you know the rest. The Bengals didn't score, so therefore nothing hit. So I kind of ruined, I ruined everything. Well, I ruined the Super Bowl.
I'm not one of those people that feel like if someone starts like rooting for something or like I'm not very superstitious at all when it comes to betting, but it is one of those things of where we were all betting for one thing, and that's what I was just trying to get you to focus on. And you got a little greedy. You wanted that parlay to hit. And I mean, in hindsight, we both probably should have cashed out when the Bengals were up.
Yeah, we had that option. I had 33 yeah. bucks on the Bengals money line, and that got as high as 60 bucks. But I was greedy and tried holding out because I could have got like 90 bucks. But it is what it is.
It's tough to see those screenshots of Jalen Ramsey on the ground and Chase just wide open.
That's what I was about to bring up. That final play you had, if the Bengals offensive line just could have held for like literally 2 seconds more, which would have been 2 seconds longer than they did, then Joe Burrow would have found Jamar Chase wide open with nothing but a wide open field for the touchdown that would have just brought us to the promised land. We would all hit. But instead, here we are, nothing. Although my brother-in-law was there, he did end up, he was just doing prop bets throughout the entire game, and he ended up. He had a lot on going through different things with the Rams. So it was a good night for him. Everyone else in the room, though, was pretty ticked.
Yeah.
But it is what it is.
I won the touchback, and then he was juicing Bengals' first score in the second half, so we won that as well.
There you go.
I think she actually said on the first drive, so I think it was actually a decent little kicker there. But yeah, I'm interested in seeing what you have topics wise. I mean, the Super Bowl was fun and all, but I'm interested in seeing what you have topics wise because something that we're starting to notice is a trend of where. This show, we don't really disagree on too many things, but every other show we're on, we almost disagree on everything.
Well, that's good.
I crushed you on the podium in the Bogey Bro Banner podcast. Yeah. Crushed you on that. Everyone in the comments were
not
agreeing
everyone.
With me.
Definitely not everyone.
Everyone was agreeing with me. And then the Brody vs. Cal that's in our Heiser Club podcast, you took that one down. I conceded the loss. And, yeah, so I think we're 1-1, so we'll see. Maybe we'll break the tie for the week.
We are 1-1. Yeah, I mean, we're 1-1 if you give you the podium win, but it is what it is. I don't think I have anything that'll get that heated as the cow, because, I mean, that caused me to storm out and just go to sheets on my own. But I do have some that we might disagree on.
You're pulling a Trevor there, man.
Yeah, I did. I pulled a Trevor. I just walked out of the room. We do have the first topic here. Actually, I'm assuming you watched some of the Waste Management Open this past weekend. At least saw highlights.
I saw some highlights. I didn't watch too much of it because again, like I'm in disc golf mode right now. So when disc golf season's around, I really don't catch too much golf. I'll try to look to see who wins and see who's kind of, you know, look at the leaderboards every once in a while. But this weekend I was pretty much doing, I was watching the All-Star event, I was practicing, and then I was kind of getting a bunch of packing and stuff done. So,
but you saw the chaos on 16. That was posted everywhere.
I did. Well, I saw multiple chaos things. Yeah. I saw the first one that I saw was my boy Harry Higgs, where I think it was in Thursday or Friday's round, he made a long putt and then just chucked his putter up. Who knows where that landed? Hopefully it didn't land on the green and make a huge mark. And then I saw obviously the hole in one, and then I saw also Harry Higgs again drained one, flashed the crowd, and then his playing partner took off his shirt and just started doing the helicopter around his head. So yeah, good times always at the Waste Management. It's honestly, if you've never been to a golf tournament and you're kind of like not the biggest golf fan in the world, it is the best golf tournament to go to. It has the best people watching of all time. Me and Kelsey have gone multiple years. We didn't get to go this year, unfortunately, but it is a phenomenal time.
Well, that's actually a great, because that's what I was about to bring up. So is hole 16 in golf? Because this year was, I've seen it years and years in the past, but this is the first time I've seen them like literally chucking full beer cans and stuff like that onto the course. I don't know if that happens every year, but
it doesn't happen every year, but it has, I believe that there's stuff like that has happened in the past.
So is hole 16 in golf seen as something that's like a great thing and they want more of, or is that something that's gone too far?
I would say Waste Management, that's its niche.
Yeah.
What the heck was I trying to say? That's its niche. Everyone knows it as the fun party tournament. Obviously, you still have pros going there and trying to win, but it's a completely different vibe from all the other tournaments, just alone the amount of spectators that are at the tournament. I mean, you got 100,000 plus, I believe, over the course of the weekend. So it's an insane amount of people there. And then also the amount of people that are there that don't care a lick about the golf is drastically higher than any other golf tournament. But yeah, it's a party tournament. It's a fun tournament. I think it's a really good thing for golf to have, because a sport that sometimes is seen as too button up and too this high class kind of, you have to have a lot of money to golf and all this. It's nice to kind of see the guys loosen up a little bit on that hole. And then, you know, I think it is a good segue into getting, or a good branch into getting some maybe newer fans into golf with that tournament. They have, I believe, concerts every night as well. So it's not just about the golf. There's a lot more other things going on there. So yeah, I don't actually see it. I don't think they need more golf tournaments. Like, I think it would be actually kind of weird if another golf tournament tried to just create that. I believe it kind of organically created over the years. And then also the people, oh gosh, I'm blanking on their names. But the Waste Management has a group of like, I want to say it's like 15, 20, 30 guys. And you can see them every year. They're wearing kind of a different outfit. And those are really the people that are kind of local to the scene out there in the Scottsdale, Phoenix area. And those are people that kind of really bring the culture of the tournament alive. And so I think it'd be very difficult for another tournament to just be like, oh, we're just going to make this hole like 16 at Waste Management. So I think they found a really good sweet spot. It makes sense, too, in the location. Phoenix, Scottsdale, if you've ever been out there, a lot of young people, kind of a big party town. So it just kind of makes sense.
Interesting. Because when I was looking at it as like a third party, well, first off, I thought the timing was hilarious with the guy last week, perfect timing, yeah, saying that golf wasn't a party sport and disc golf was. Secondary, when I was looking at it, there was two aces on hole 16 or hole ones on hole 16. Both of those, crowd going crazy, throwing stuff, makes sense. There's a hole in one. You know what I mean? Like, that never happens. But then there was one point where it was either, think it was, I always get them confused. It was Justin Thomas. He chipped a shot in. I'm almost positive it was him. He chipped a shot in, and it was a nice, it was a good shot, but it wasn't an eight. It wasn't a hole in one. It wasn't anything crazy. And they went crazy again, and you could see him like get a little frustrated with it, which is when it made me be like, has this gone too far to where like golf's going to dial it back? But on the second, like the second hand of that was like, this is obviously getting a ton of exposure for golf and all of that. And I was wondering, in disc golf, A, should a tournament make that like, hey, let's make the loudest hole in disc golf where you walk up to it and, you know, obviously in disc golf, it wouldn't be 60, 70,000 people, but it might be able to be 400 or 500 people who are still, you know, cheering the entire time you're, you know, chanting your name, walking up, similar to hole 8 at Maple Hill, but a little bit of a bigger scale where they can do it there or not. And yeah. If they do, if there is a hole, what hole would you pick as like, this hole makes a lot of sense to have it? Is it hole 8 at Maple Hill, or do you even think it's a, was it a bad idea for disc golf?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, I think Maple Hill, especially now with the playoffs being the way they are and it being towards the end of the season, I don't think that's a good idea.
I didn't even think about it being playoffs.
Because waste management's very early on in the season. And I mean, it's a big tournament obviously, but it's not a situation of where guys are, you know, scrapping for points near the end of the season to try to make it into the playoffs or whatever it may be. So if they were going to do it, honestly, like a tournament like Las Vegas, finding a hole at Las Vegas would be not a bad idea. Or even a, I'm trying to think, like the earlier tournaments are kind of iffy, like Waco, there's not really a good hole. I'm thinking off the top of my head, because you need a couple things, right? You need an actual good hole to where it needs to be some sort of par three situation. But then at the same time, I feel like it has to organically happen.
Yeah.
I think with 16, it was kind of a twofold of where they organically allowed the crowd to kind of get rowdy. And I think some of the players played up to that, but at the same time they built, you know, the stadium and the people will come type of thing, where I don't know if you, I mean, I guess if you find a good hole and you build like bleachers and grandstands around it, but I would say the only thing right now that's going to probably be stopping that is just the sheer number of fans at these tournaments is obviously way smaller. And then I would also say there is a large portion of people that come to these tournaments that just walk with cards. I would say you are probably not in the majority of spectators if you go to a tournament and just post up on a hole. Obviously, you said hole 8 at Maple Hill, and you have people there. But I would say if you looked at the grand scheme of the amount of people hole 8 versus – and also the amount of people on hole 8 at 10 o'clock in the morning, not at 3 or 4 in the afternoon, right?
Yeah.
That percentage is probably gonna be really, really small. So I think for this to work, it needs to be a good hole. You need to build some sort of stand, and then you need to make sure that you have enough spectators coming. And I don't think right now, from what I have seen on the few tournaments I've played with spectators, it's not as common for fans to just post up on a hole.
Yeah.
You rarely ever see it.
Well, but I have seen when they've been selling tickets this year for the Pro Tour, they seem to be selling kind of like different styles of tickets at most of these events where there's like general admission.
Yes.
And those are like general admission areas, and then like VIP where you can follow.
OTB Open's a good example. OTB Open, they had, I want to say, I can't remember what numbers hold, 7 and 8, 8 and 9, something like that, where it was basically a tent kind of a peninsula, and it was right caddy corner to a tee shot, either hole 8 or hole 9 or some hole. And then you could also see the previous hole 7 or something set up there. I want to say they actually were probably playing music as well, and there was a whole bunch of people there. So now that you brought that up, some tournaments are you're starting to see something like that, of where like you have these VIP spots where some people are posting up. I was saying more generally, like, you're not really seeing where in golf you will see people literally just post up on the back of a hill,
yeah,
on some holes, because they love that hole or whatever. And also that's the best way of seeing every player. Right now, disc golf, the way it's set up, it's like there's not enough name recognition to where people want to sit and watch 4 hours of disc golfers come mm-hmm. through, because there might be a section of an hour of where you don't know a single disc golfer that's playing.
Mm.
That will get better, obviously, but in golf, if you want to see all the only way you're going to turn on to go through.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah, I think because the one of the main reasons I even wanted to bring it up of, like, is it a good idea for disc golf, was because of how much I was seeing it on social media from across all accounts, just because it's a crazy thing to witness on hole 16 at Waste Management. Yeah. And I was like, that could be a good marketing tactic for an event, because if hole 8 at Maple Hill, unfortunately, I don't think it's the area around it's big enough to build it out to where you are going to have so many people there. But if a tournament was able to accomplish it, it does have to happen organically. And I also think it's a good point you brought up that the local community is like someone who leads it, because obviously most, like, a lot of the spectators in disc golf, all the spectators are from the local community. But if it is able to turn into something, A, the reach within disc golf is going to be big for the tournament, because it becomes something you want to go be a part of like, oh, it's like Duke basketball. I'm a Duke fan. I have to relate it to something I know. Cameron Indoor is small intentionally. Obviously, Duke has enough money, they could build a big stadium, but the reason they keep it small and intimate is it's an experience. So when you walk into Cameron, if you're in the Cameron Crazies, I got to be in there for one game. Well, the general admission's like butted up next to it. It's an experience. It's something you remember for your lifetime, and it's something that you want to travel to go be a part of. So if a tournament in disc golf is able to create that type of atmosphere, because I'm not a diehard golf fan, I'll watch it here and there. Going to hole 16 at Waste Management looks like a blast. That looks like one of the more fun things you can do, regardless mm-hmm. if you're a golf fan or not. So I think that's something where a disc golf tournament might be able to, if they're able to successfully implement that, it might be a good marketing tactic of, like, I don't know, make it like a more fun atmosphere to come watch disc golf, and possibly if something crazy happens, a bigger, better look if it expands outside reach-wise to Sports Center, wherever it gets.
Yeah, two things on that. One, I think James Conrad's shot at Worlds doesn't nearly go as crazy if there was no crowd.
Absolutely.
The fact that there was a lot of people there, you know, probably 1,500 people or so. I'm not obviously a huge fan of fans running onto the actual course.
Yeah.
But the excitement, the noise, all that made that environment way cooler and way more shareable than if there was no one there. And then what you were just saying too about the experience, that is something that everyone, I mean, you look at a AAA baseball game, for example, no one's really going to a AAA baseball game because they're watching incredible baseball. I've gone to multiple AAA baseball games. I couldn't tell you a single player that was out there on the field. No clue. But they do such a good job of making it a fun experience. So if you want to have it as a date night, if you want to bring your family there, it's a fun experience for everyone. And I think it's one of those tough situations with disc golf, because right now there's not enough money in the purses to where players are actually walking home with enough money. I think we just looked at Las Vegas. I don't know if this is something you're going to talk about, but the Las Vegas potential payout just came out. And first place is $4,000, right? The purses are still so low in disc golf that it's one of those, it's a tough situation, because do you do something where it's like, okay, well, maybe if we start spending a lot more money on amenities and the experience, so that way spectators, when they come, it's not just about the disc golf. It's a much more bigger event than just that.
Yeah.
Maybe we get more spectators and then the purse gets bigger. And then players might make more money for winning. So you might look at it that way. But then there's another thing of where it's like, okay, well, if we spend all this money on all this stuff and disc golf isn't there yet, now we're just wasting all this money. And It's a very tough situation to be in, but clearly there's a lot of things that the disc golf pro tour can do to make it where it's not like you're just showing up to a park.
Yeah.
And watching. Okay, right now it feels like you're almost going, you know what it feels like? It feels like if anyone ran cross country, they'll know exactly what I mean. It feels like you're going to like a high school cross country meet where you show up, you're in like basically a park, and there is some sort of like signage and stuff like that. There's some porta potties here and there, and that's basically it.
Yeah.
So if they can make it more an event, have like vendors that come out, and instead of just like, you know, maybe instead of just having a tent and they're underneath the tent, maybe there's actually an experience there. Stuff like that,
yeah.
I think matters a lot. But again, it's a very difficult situation to be in because it's like for them, they have to figure out, we only have so much resources right now. Where should we be putting our time and effort into?
Yeah, well, especially now that they're starting to charge spectators, it's one thing if you charge and there is some type of experience, like you're saying, versus if you charge and nothing changes and it's like, hey, last year I walked into this public park for free and watched disc golf, and now this year I got to pay $10 to do the exact same thing. That's a tougher look than, okay, well, I paid $10, but, you know, I at least get, you know, at least I now get access to the fly mart that's here, or at least I get to X, Y, or Z, or, you know, on my VIP pass, it does get me access to follow this card all the way through versus, you know, the $5 general admission, you're parked on three or four of the holes or something like that. So they're definitely focused on it somewhat, but yeah, it's a good point that disc golf has to just kind of grow a little bit more to make the return on investment worth it before they start pouring money into fan experience.
I also think too, it's not only on the disc golf pro tour here either. I think it's also on the sponsors of the tournament as well. What you just mentioned is something that I think obviously some spectators and stuff might get excited about, like a fly mart and get to see all these discs and stuff. But that is such a, like, seeing the pro shop and stuff at or going to like the NBA store or whatever it is, like everyone wants to go and pick up merchandise from the event, the sporting event you're at. That's always a fun thing to do. But if that's all you're ever doing, I feel like the bar is so low that someone can come in and create some sort of experience that could be really exciting for fans to come in and do. And it's, again, like, it's just building certain things out. So, like, instead of just having a net and someone, like, holding a radar gun and you just throw a disc and you see how fast you can throw it, somehow building that out to where it actually looks like some sort of, like, standalone experience, I think would do wonders versus right now, a lot of times, it's very bare bones. Everything is very, very bare bones.
Yeah. It'd be kind of sick. It'd be kind of sick at that, what you just said, the radar gun thing. This idea just came to me when you're talking about it. If, like, you walked up and there's, like, a board behind the net, like, you're throwing into the net in the middle and the board around it, like, has, like, Simon's throw speed, Paul's throw speed, like, all these different throw speeds, and then yours, so you, like, when you throw, you're like, oh, shoot, I'm 25 miles an hour slower than how fast Simon's throwing it, or, like, yeah. Something like that to where,
or even,
I don't know.
What would be even cooler actually would actually, if you did something along the lines, again, these are all things that are feasible to do. You just need people to be on the job doing it. Like something that would be sick to do for like the throwing thing is, you know, when you go to the fair and you like hit the mallet on the thing and you see how high you go up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have something like that of where what you were just talking about. Have Drew Gibson, Simon, Eagle, have all these different players on the level. And then when you throw, you just basically have a system set up of where you know where that goes. And so then you have that little do-do-do-do-do-do, and you see how high you go up. So maybe you have like an MA4, MA3, MA1, and then you start going pros. And so when you go up and you throw 50 miles an hour, it's like do-do-do-do-do, MA2. And then, like, I mean, just something as simple as that, small stuff like that goes a long way.
Is anything like that even happening at Pro Tours right now? Like a fan experience, stuff like that, of like events to do outside of just watch disc golf?
Well, didn't you do something at USDGC where it's like you just threw
USDGC had it. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Is like I think what they had was like you just threw a disc out in the field and they told you how fast you threw it.
Yeah, they that was how fast. They also had like accuracy and a putting challenge. But USDGC was one of the first events I've ever went to that was there. College Nationals had something for us as like the college athletes at the Fly Mart where you could throw and like get your speed. But I'm thinking like any tournament, I've been to quite a few pro tours and I haven't really seen that.
You ready for another experience that would be sick?
Yeah.
Dye your disc.
Heck yeah.
Spend like $35 or $40 and they basically walk you through how to dye your disc. And you dye your disc right there and you set it up and then you go out and you watch disc golf the rest of the day and you come back and your disc is ready to go. Like, there's just small things like that. Food also is a big one, I think, also.
There's a lot of people in chat were saying. We're saying, like, food trucks, beer tents, stuff like that.
Having lots more food situations like that would be huge. I think also like signage too, as easy as it would be to just get like leaderboards and stuff like that throughout the course would be useful. And then having like almost like a spot of where, you know, maybe there's four food trucks and a couple beers on tap. And then they have like I think that is one thing that the Disc Golf Pro Tour said they might have this year. So it'd be interesting to see how they incorporate that. Of where I think they're going to have like a huge TV broadcasting it. Oh, so like that would be a cool like hangout spot to come back, watch some coverage, eat some food, hang out, maybe have some baskets around there. There's a lot of stuff. And also I don't think everything has to be disc golf, right? Like you can have cornhole set up or you could have like a spike ball thing or you can have other things set up. It doesn't have every experience thing there doesn't have to be disc golf.
Yeah.
There can be other things involved. I mean, heck, you go to like, again, I'm going with the PGA Tour event, but you go there and like they have, sometimes you can go and like do a sick car experience where, you know, BMW's there and you get to, you know, go and not test drive, but you get to like go in their new BMW car that's coming out. So, obviously, that's way down the road because the money is just not there for like a sponsor like that to do something. Everything's probably gonna be very disc golf oriented. But my point being, like, think outside the box. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see who's the first kind of sponsor and stuff that puts a little bit of time and effort into their experiences actually on the grounds. But again, this only matters if you have the foot traffic.
Yeah.
No one's going to care if you have a tournament that has 500 spectators a day. That number's got to get up over 5,000 for some of these experiences to have any value.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, when you were saying fan experience, I was like thinking in my head, like, what the heck can you even offer people? But basically making it like a festival where you're there and you get to have fun doing stuff.
I literally just came up with all that stuff off the top of my head.
Yeah, I've just never even thought of it. So hopefully someone at the Pro Tour is thinking the same way you're thinking.
Imagine if someone actually paid someone to all they're doing was trying to think of events that they could do.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
That's a great idea. But all right, speaking of events, we did have disc golf this past weekend. The All-Star weekend went down. I'm not going to go over results and all of that. If you want to hear all of that, you can check out the episode of Griplock that dropped on yesterday. But I do want to get your thoughts, Brody, because I know you were watching it. Go for it.
Shout out to Griplock being on Monday now.
Yeah.
That's big. I like the change. You guys are going to be ready to go. You guys, everyone needs to make sure you're watching Griplock on Mondays now to get the latest of what just happened. All the analysis. And then Trevor's show comes out on Thursday. So yeah, quick little shout out to Trevor, his interview show,
The Trevor Staub Show. Like the Pat McAfee
show.
Comes out
Thursday.
Definitely didn't copy it.
Pay attention.
Yeah, his first interview is with Drew Gibson, and Trevor is very excited, very passionate about this podcast. I haven't seen Trevor get this fired up about something in a while, so I'm super excited. I've seen bits and pieces, and he's done a really good job. I think a lot of people are going to enjoy it. He's already shot like I think he shot 3 or 4 interviews already. He's got another one tomorrow. I won't spoil who all those are. So he's stockpiling up. But yeah, he does, like, today, for instance, he spent, no joke, probably close to 4 hours doing research on the guests he's interviewing tomorrow. He was learning stuff about this person that I was like, where on earth did you find that? And he just was like deep in their Facebook and LinkedIn finding stuff to ask him. And it's so I think he's gonna bring a pretty great product. I think people are gonna be very, very surprised and happy with it. But yeah, that show comes out Thursday, is the first premiere episode, so be sure to tune into that. But what was your thoughts on the format for the All-Star Weekend this past weekend? I know you were able to watch most of it because we were texting back and forth during a lot of it. But what do you think overall? But specifically, I want to hear your thoughts on the singles going stroke play instead of match play.
Yeah. So I think obviously this is the first time, second time they've done an All-Star event.
Mm-hmm.
First time that they've tried like the skills thing. I think they'll be able to learn a lot from feedback, from fans' feedback, from the skills challenge.
Mm.
The long drive, the long drive was okay. They didn't pick a great hole for it, which I thought was already kind of an issue. They're at a golf course. There should be probably a driving range. I haven't been to that golf course, so I don't know.
Yeah, you weren't there to rent it out, so that's why.
there should be some sort of driving range probably out there. One thing I didn't like about the distance was, first off, the guy was shooting the distance, there was some sort of like chalancing going on of where sometimes he was like a foot behind the disc and sometimes he was like right up on the disc.
And he'd also run into the middle if it was like on the left edge. He'd like run in, but like wouldn't go back in it. Like the distances weren't quite accurate.
What the heck is he shooting? Like, as far as I'm concerned, I didn't see anything around where they were throwing.
Maybe like the tree behind him or something.
That's where it's like, what was he shooting? What I would love to see is driving range and then have painted lines on inbounds and out of bounds, and then have painted lines like every 25 feet starting at, you can do basically 100, 200, 300, and then probably go like 350, 450, 550. And then from there, like every 25 feet or something go. And then that way, it's not purely on, because what they were doing was like purely on total distance, like straight line from the tee to where it ended up.
Yeah.
And what it should really be is total distance from a straight line, like perpendicular from the tee.
So it rewards you for going straight.
Yeah. If you throw something and it goes 60 feet left, you're not throwing it nearly as far. So it awards people for throwing, straighter shots, better shots. But also just from a fan's perspective, we had no gauge on like how far this disc was traveling. So I think if you go out to a football field, for example, and you had a camera, because I think also filming this, they have the drone, never show drone for any sort of shot coverage, unless you want to show like a sick replay and it's from the drone, that's fine. Please don't ever cut to a drone angle for an actual shot. You lose all sorts of idea of what the heck is going on.
Mm.
But that was a little quick side note. But I think the best way, I think, filming the driving range is having someone like 20 feet up, like in scaffolding behind.
Mm.
And so you're up high. And so what that'll basically do is you'll basically see discs travel across and you'll see it pass all the lines. So you can kind of get an idea, because I don't know if you watched it, but for me, we're just all sitting around being like, is that 400 feet? 500?
Yeah.
Like, there's no.
You're waiting for the rangefinder call to come in.
Like, how far someone threw it. I thought, other than that, the long drive was fun to watch. I thought it was a big swing and a miss for the shot shaping. I don't know what they were trying to do with these like ribbons. I thought we all decided that the Mando at Worlds was a terrible idea, so I don't know why they created 6 of them in between these trees in the shadows of where no one could see anything. two of the shots were pretty dumb as well, of where like one of them literally the guys, like Kevin was, I think, was trying to throw a grenade over the tree. Some of the other guys were trying to throw spikeisers. But the women, the distance was so far that they couldn't throw over. So they were literally just like throwing shots into the trees and just hoping. Like, I just thought that was a big miss. I thought for shot shaping, you can't, like, let's not all stand in the same spot and just do, okay, backing and four. They could have been creating like a thing or something of where you got to throw it through this tunnel and then try to get here, and then maybe like a skip shot of where it's like you have to skip the disc in this circle and then try to get as close to this target, or a roller or something to where you could really see people throw cool creative shots. Where here is like a lot of the shots really honestly, like the through the middle of the gap, the low, a lot of them look the same. And it just wasn't really that exciting. Let me turn the light on here so I'm a little brighter.
There we go.
And then the putting was probably the most entertaining.
Yeah.
Of all of them, honestly. The putting was probably the most entertaining. I still think a little lackluster in the sense of where, you know, like they basically were like obstructed, was like you just have to take a straddle, I guess.
Yeah.
That was kind of weird. They did have one that was like behind a tree. But I think they'll be able to take a lot of feedback from the skills and be able to make it better next year.
Yeah, no, the skills are definitely the biggest thing that I noticed. You brought up some good points in the like actual shot shaping one. The biggest thing I noticed was like the pacing of it. There were times where it just felt like there could have been more going on.
Long drive was 15 minutes and shot making was like an hour.
Yeah. When I was telling Trevor, because Trevor was driving during it, so I was trying to like summarize it for him, and I was like, realistically, I think that they should have definitely had the men and women going at the same time to avoid that hour lull, and it also could have helped with some of the lull, because like as soon as the men are done with distance, you go straight to the women with the shot shaping, you know, obviously maybe restructure the way the shot shaping was done, because I like the idea of it, but
putting should have been head to head. Also,
putting all head to head would have been great as well.
It got exciting, sure, but it would have been a lot more exciting, I think, if they were going head to head with someone. So instead of you putting 50 times and then your turn is over, like you putt once and then the person you're going up against walks up and putts once.
Yeah, and that also would have made it more exciting, because like there was a chance
more pressure.
There was a chance for the first person out, which I think it was Yuli. There was a chance for Yuli to set a line that no one else could touch. Yeah. So like Yuli could have went first and just done something ridiculous, and it is what it is. But yeah, head-to-head matchup would have been cool. Same thing with distance. It would have been somewhat cool. I guess they were trying to get players in a rhythm, but it would have been kind of cool to like throw and almost have to match. But you know,
I don't like the team aspect personally.
Oh, for the All-Star Weekend, you didn't like the team.
I think, especially for skills, it makes absolutely no sense. I think if they would have done like a bracket format, like distance, so you have Drew versus Ezra, you have Garrett versus Calvin, you have Eagle versus whatever, you know, you end up having like eight guys enter, and then you know they're seated or whatever, and it's bracket play, where they each throw three times, furthest one advances, and then you got like a finals. Same thing with putting. I think that would have made it way more interesting versus this whole team nonsense. I get like the draft was actually pretty funny, seeing how uncomfortable some people were with that. I think that's what brought people by the most enjoyment. But I think at least for the skills, if you want to keep the team thing for like the doubles and the singles, whatever. But I think at least for the skills, I think that would really bring out the most competition between everyone, is if at the end of the day, you're like this person, same thing as like 3-point shootout, dunk contest, like having someone be like, this person is the long drive winner for the All-Star 2022. This person is the putting winner for whatever.
Like almost remove it from the actual team event.
Yeah. And then have the team event separate.
That makes sense. Yeah. I liked the team aspect on the doubles and singles. I thought that kind of played in together, but the skills aspect, you're right, because I mean, realistically, when it was all said and done, there were so many points on the board for singles on Sunday that no matter what happened Friday and Saturday, it was a wash going into Sunday. Realistically, whatever team, I mean, you might have had a point or two advantage if like everything went your way, but realistically, whatever team on FPO and MPO did really well on Sunday was going to walk away with the overall championship. Doubles, I think, was fine head-to-head, and I think singles head-to-head, would you have preferred it to be match play over the way they did it with stroke play?
I think so. I mean, obviously, it came down, you know, the way it worked out very exciting because the last match was going to decide who won, and it just so happened to be Calvin and Eagle going back and forth, and Eagle making that incredible putt.
Yeah.
Throw. I don't even know if you can't call that a putt. So it ended up working out for sure. But the reason why I don't necessarily like stroke play as much is, you know, look for example, like the Matty O Nico battle where Nico aces, Matty O bogeys. That's a 3-shot swing right there. I just think match play, it's way easier for the Disc Golf Pro Tour to have multiple matches going on and explaining what's going on. That, I think, was one of the big blunders, I would say, of the event, was the fact of, like, they would literally just pop up, like, oh, right now, if the event ended, Team Calvin would have 7 points and Team Eagle would have 5. And, like, that's what they gave us. Versus, like, having a screen pop up and it shows Calvin's +2 through +7 and Kevin Jones is +1 through +5 and blah, and you just being able to read it really easily. I think also match play makes it to where you get a lot more exciting plays, similar to like Eagle making that shot on 18. He knew he had to make it, so he took a little bit more time focused on exactly what he needed to do to try and make that shot. In match play, if you throw a bad shot, tee shot, and someone parks it, you no longer are just like laying up and tapping in and moving on. You're now trying to make that shot from 150 feet, which I think in disc golf has a huge advantage over golf match play because players can throw in from distance. Where in golf, it's like, it's a lot less likely for someone to like chip a shot in or pitch a shot in. So I think you kind of lose that a little bit not doing match play.
Yeah, what was funny is I enjoyed the stroke play aspect, and one of my arguments for the stroke play aspect was actually your argument against it, which was the Nico and Matty O situation, because it happened too with Rebecca Cox and I believe it was Sarah Hokum. Theirs is on hole 18. But what I like about stroke play is you do have a chance where, like, if it were match play, I'd have to go back and look hole by hole basis, but if it were match play, you have a chance for the match to be over through, well, like the 10 or 11 holes.
The Yuli match would have not made it past hole 12.
Yeah, but realistically, Yuli could have somehow come back in holes 13 through 18 stroke play.
Yeah, there's obviously different advantages to both, for yeah. Sure. Like, there's not one that's better than the other, but then, like, if Yuli, like, disc golf is also another sport where it is very hard to make up. We all know it's very hard to make up a lot, especially on a course like that.
Yeah.
Where they set that course up to make birdies. They did not set up that course to be very difficult. So if someone's 6 shots down with 6 holes to play, that match is over. So luckily we didn't get in a situation where the Eagle Calvin match was close and Kevin Jones started falling apart a little bit to where he made the Adam Kevin Jones hole or match decently close. So like some of the matches at the end got close and so it was exciting. But if those things are lopsided of where if someone's just not having a good day or not putting well, now you're getting a situation where it's like, okay, we're just having to, you know, these guys are just continuing to play and this match is over.
Yeah, that's fair too. I definitely thought that the singles was exciting, coming down to the wire, and like you said, the Eagle throw-in thing. And one thing I did really like, the way the format was, and the live scoring on PDGA for the weekend and stuff like that, made following it very, very confusing because like the you would see so the scores, but the scores didn't really matter unless you were just seeing who they were going head to head against. And then, like you said, they'd be like, if it ended right now, so-and-so would be up. But it's like, okay, it is what it is. But one thing that was very promising and I loved was we saw a ton of golf. There was no downtime of people walking, which is what live disc golf should be. And I think some people were turned off because the All-Star Weekend was hard to follow because of the format.
Yeah.
But if you're in a normal tournament, they flash up the leaderboard and you know, oh, James Conrad's in contention. Then they cut to James Conrad. It's a lot easier to follow and understand what's going on versus, okay, James Conrad's 12 under, but now I have to remember in my head, who's he going against at the All-Star Weekend? But I did really like it felt very good pacing. It didn't feel like I was sitting down and just like walking along with the card, but I'm sitting in my living room. It felt like I was seeing 80% of the golf that was happening on the course and stuff that wasn't very important. I wasn't really seeing, which isn't something I could really say much about last year's coverage and years in the past coverage. So it seems like they either added cameras or took some notes on switching. But I don't know if you noticed that too, but I was very impressed with the actual like pacing and switching of the live stream.
Yeah, and I think it'll only get better because they obviously have more cameras to film a lot more shots. And so when they start getting comfortable of doing, because I didn't see too much of it at the All-Star Tournament, but when they start getting comfortable, like being like earlier,
yeah,
like showing a shot that happened earlier, now you're going to get in a situation of where you're just seeing good shots.
Yeah.
You're seeing things that actually matter, where right now we still are. I mean, obviously the All-Star event, all those matches mattered. And they did a good job of not like showing for FPO too. When a match was like a blowout, you didn't really see that much of it. Like, I think Haley King was getting blown out by, was it Lisa Fakis, I believe she was going up against?
Sounds about right, yeah.
You didn't see anything.
The same thing with Yuli. Like, I don't think I saw Yuli throw a shot in singles.
They went out separately. So Yuli played, I don't know who he played, but they went out separately.
Yeah,
same thing with like
right.
Holly Finley and someone else. They went out as a single,
that's
so
true.
They didn't have cameras on them. But my point is like, Haley King had cameras on her
because
they were showing her earlier on. Then she was just like losing by like six shots. So you didn't see anything from her. And then all of a sudden it got close and then they went back to showing her. So I like that they are showing the stuff that matters. And then hopefully when the tour is around too, they can start being like, even if someone were over par for the day or whatever, if they throw a six shot, they can say earlier on five, check out this shot.
Yeah.
That's one thing I think they also are missing is just like the stationary cameras of just like loading up. And I think especially now that there are more players that are well known on tour this year, that there will be a significant amount of people that aren't on feature cards or aren't on lead chase and stuff that people want to watch.
Yeah.
So having a stationary camera out there in the mornings or whatever it may be, filming this like getting this footage of where they can always just pull to throughout, I think will be very good.
Yeah, no, it definitely got me excited and got me ready. They also today just announced, this isn't really a debate topic, but they just announced the new like payment structure. The pricing for Disc Golf Network went up a little bit, but they are offering free rounds to
two majors.
Anyone, I believe, for like Las Vegas Challenge and stuff like that. Also some of the rounds at Worlds. And then they're also offering a like pay per round or per event. So if there's like an event you really want to watch, but you don't want to pay for the whole month, you can buy the event for cheaper. Or if something crazy is about like, if it got really tight and you're like, man, I really want to watch the third round before the fourth round, you can pay even cheaper to watch just one round, which are pretty great options, I think, that they didn't have last year. So it gives people a little bit wider chance to kind of pick and choose what they want so they don't, you know, lock into a subscription model. But yeah, I really enjoyed all of that. And one final thing that I took note of from the All-Star Weekend that I wanted to actually quiz you on was the new OB rule. I don't know if you saw it all going down. There's a lot of confusion, but I'm going to just test you.
No, I saw it.
I'm going to just test you first just to make sure you know this going into Las Vegas, and then we'll talk about it super quick. So first scenario, your disc lands OB. Which direction can you now take your 1 meter relief?
semicircle around where it went out of bounds.
Boom. All right. Second scenario, your disc is now landed.
Is that, can you go closer to the hole though still?
Yes. Yep.
In that scenario, you still can go closer to the hole?
Yeah. It basically just, the way the worded is basically just 1 meter relief. So it doesn't say a specific direction anymore.
Okay.
So basically, as long as you're within 1 meter. Now, okay. Your second scenario, your disc lands within 1 meter of OB, but it's safe. Does that change anything with the direction you can take your relief?
Yeah, you it just, it's the old rule. So you can go a meter away from the OB. I think that one, they might have changed it to no closer to the hole, though.
Possibly. But it is the old rule. It's perpendicular, which kind of confuses me, but also kind of doesn't. I could see
No closer to the hole doesn't make sense.
I don't think that's true. I think it's just you get 1 meter off perpendicular.
I saw the whole fiasco that went down. I was watching it when it went down. I heard someone say no closer to the hole. I don't know why.
I've never read no closer to the hole other than casual relief in disc golf.
Okay. Because I'm just thinking if there's OB directly behind the basket.
Yeah.
And you go OB. Or no, you don't go OB, let's say, and you're like 1 foot away from OB, how do you putt from that without standing out of bounds?
You gotta take it closer.
You gotta take it closer to the hole. So it could have, it unfortunately happened to the wrong person. I think if that scenario happened to anyone out there, I think they probably would have done the same thing. It was just kind of funny that it happened to the person that is like the spokesperson for the PGA rules.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things of where, you know, you're going to have a lot of people being like, it's your job, you should know the rules. But then you're also going to have the pros tell you there are so many rules and so many very specific rules that there are certain times where it's not worth being like, oh yeah, I'm 99% sure this is the rule, and like getting a stroke penalty for it. Like, you're much better off being like, let's 100% sure. And this is where I think having officials around the course would speed up play so much, because what you just saw right there is probably what happens multiple times in a tournament. And there's no way you can tell me that a marshal on a golf cart can't get to that person faster than it takes someone to pull out their phone, go on the website, look for the exact rule, read the whole rule, interpret the rule. Like, that'll just side to my decision of having marshals out there whipping around. Cause even if they give you the wrong thing, if they tell you to do something, like, that is, you're good.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, do you think that this is a scenario where, like, because your certified officials exam lasts 3 years, I believe it is, somewhere in like 3 to 5 years range, to where like you can be certified at this point with how many rules have changed in the last few years, you can be certified on PDGA rules that are just nowhere even close to accurate. Do you think it's something where pros should, like, if you're a touring pro, either the pro tour or whoever would require like a recertification before every season or something like that to make sure? Because like, there might be pros that just have no idea the OB rule changed, or have no idea that the stance behind the lie changed last year or this year. If you want to walk up and wedge your putter into the side of the basket instead of dropping it into the tray, that still counts.
No,
last year it didn't count. Yeah. So like, do you think that's something where like you should be forced to reclassify or retest?
I'm indifferent on that. I don't actually know what the right answer. I don't think I have the right answer for that. I don't know what the right answer is for it. You know, I think disc golf, it's a little bit different than other sports because you are kind of self-policing yourself and the people around you, where other sports, you really just see people be like, oh, they didn't know the rules and now they are getting penalized for it. Where golf and disc golf, it's like, if you don't know the rules, you're now are basically potentially slowing down the pace of the play.
Yeah.
Right. So it's easier in basketball, football, hockey, whatever, to be like, oh, that guy should have known what the rule was. He just basically cost his team, because he didn't know the rule. Where in golf and disc golf, it's more like if you don't know the rule, all that's going to happen is a bunch of people are just going to talk about it until someone figures it out. Yeah. So I would say, as being an advocate of pace of play, it probably would be a lot more useful if there was some sort of way of the players knowing all the rules. But then again, like, there are so many rules, like even the Mando rule is still very confusing. If I get in a situation with a Mando, I'm going to be not 100% on how to play that disc. Cause even thinking about it, it's still one of those things of where it's like, am I actually lined up the right way?
Yeah.
Cause there's a lot of things that just don't, it doesn't feel natural, if that makes sense. It's not like the, oh, this is common sense. This seems obvious. This is exactly what you should do. So yeah, I don't know what the right answer is there.
Yeah. I just thought it was
even like, you gotta test someone. Cause what is the test? Like 5 questions, 7 questions or something?
It's like 10 questions. Yeah. It's not long.
I mean, what is that doing?
It's more so just like something you have to pass. Cause every time you take it, you get new questions. So then you at least, everyone on tour has to at least refresh themselves on the rules, is essentially what it's guaranteeing. Cause you're not going to like go into it and just waste your day away with not knowing the rules.
I think it's very, very essential for the pros to know the rules. How do you enforce that? I don't know the best way of doing that.
Well, there you have it. Yeah. I was just curious. Cause like I said, it wasn't even just the one, scenario with Sarah Hokum. I heard a few other pros, and some of them were asking because the All-Star weekend was technically not sanctioned. It was like an X C tier. So like,
yeah, I saw some pros just flipping their discs.
Yeah, exactly. So some of them were more so asking because like, oh, are we playing by 2021 or 2022 rules? Like, oh, can I get this in any circle?
I don't think they're playing by any PDJ rules.
Well, the PDJ rules were in effect, quote unquote, like the OB rule, for instance. So I think that's what some of them weren't necessarily struggling to understand the rule. They were just asking like, oh, this relief, can I take it in the semicircle? Yeah. Or are we playing by last year's rules? But it still came through on camera sometimes, and it was like, I saw where people were like, you're a pro, you should know the rules, like that's your job is to know it. But as you said, there's a lot of rules and they are ever changing, which makes it kind of difficult to stay up to date and stay relevant with it all.
Yeah, there's a lot of just really small scenarios too of where it's like, you know, what do you get casual relief off? Do I get casual relief off of an ant pile, a beehive, a gopher hole? Like, there's small things of where it's like, in your head, you'd be like, all right, any sort of animal thing you should get relief off of, but don't actually think that's what the rules are. I think it's specific things, and I think the TDs actually have to, if it's anything other than, like basically ants that can bite you and like bees that can sting you, like anything other that can harm you, I don't think you get relief off of it. So like a gopher hole, I don't think you get relief off of it. Where in my head, like the common sense thing is like, this gopher hole could have easily just been created like right now. It's like a living thing. Like I should be able to get relief off of that. So that's where it comes tricky, because people just don't want to get stroked for stupid stuff. So they're going to take the time to figure out exactly what the rules say. That's tough to like get people to be able to just know that off the top of their head, I guess.
Yeah, I actually just looked up the casual relief, and so it says this rule 806.03 casual area. I went through like the rules around it to make sure I read it right, but it says a casual area is casual water or any area specifically designated as a casual area by the director before the round. Casual water is any body of water that is inbounds and has not been explicitly declared by the director to be in play. To obtain relief from a casual area, the player's lie may be relocated to the nearest lie, which is farther from the target, yada, yada, yada. So it doesn't even mention like beehives or anything like that.
So it doesn't even mention animals.
No, and then the next rule over is called relief area. So I was like, oh, maybe that will. But it just says a relief area is an area designated by the director from which a disc may not be played, or any inbounds area that players are prohibited by law from entering. A relief area is played as out of bounds area with the exception that no penalty throws assessed who comes in. So that's different from casual relief area. So unless maybe there's a different...
There's got to be something about animals. There has to be. But I mean, at Northwoods, when we had a practice round out there, like someone would just message Jeff Spring and be like, hey, there's a beehive, you know, there's ground bees on the side, you know, the right side of fairway 14. And they would just go out there and like spray.
Ah, here it is.
An area.
Relief from obstacles. It's a different rule.
There okay, it is. What does it say?
Player may obtain relief from the following obstacles that are on or behind the lie. Harmful insects or animals. So like if the... So gopher hole harmful. Doesn't fall in.
Harmful. What the heck is that?
I don't know. It also says people. Harmful insects or animals, people, or any item as designated by a director. Wait, so like...
Harmful is like...
Hold up, can we big brain this? Could you, like, could my lie be weird and bad so you come stand on my lie and now I get casual relief farther back because there's a person on it?
I don't know why there's people.
It says people. I don't know. Harmful insects or animals, people, or any item as designated by a director.
Why would there ever be people in your way? I don't know what that means.
I don't know, but...
That might be, like, one of those rules where it's such an old rule because they're, like...
Like at a park, yeah. That public people are
it's
at.
It's back in the day. Yeah, it's back in the day. And it's like
the picnic.
Someone's having a picnic right and refuses. Yeah.
Refuses
to
move.
That's got to be what the rule's for.
It was last updated this year, 2021.
Well, I know. They're not going back and like updating outdated rules, though.
Yeah.
Like that's an outdated rule. There's never going to be a time where there's a person
maybe,
in your way.
Maybe. Who knows?
You literally ask the person to move. They're a spectator.
So this might come in your gopher hole, might come into this one. It says if an obstacle physically prevents the player from taking a legal stance behind the marker disc or from marking a disc above or below the player surface, they may mark it immediately behind. So like if you could...
What does that mean?
If you could argue that the gopher hole prevents you from taking a legal stance because your foot would roll and then it becomes a harmful object, I don't know. You could probably argue your way around it and get relief off the gopher hole. It's basically what I'm saying.
I mean, I saw Missy Gannon. There was like a pipe or something, some sort of irrigation thing or something that was like sticking out of the ground, and she had to deal with that in her run up.
So yeah, like she like ran things. Around it.
Yeah, there's small things because of the run up in disc golf that creates a little bit more of where it's like. You can't really come up with certain things because then people are just going to be like, oh, well, I want to run up like this.
Well, this all has nothing to do with the run up. This is just addressing your lie.
I'm saying you can't get into the run up because then you'll have players being like, oh, I want to run up like this. When in fact, there's no way they would actually run up like that. The only reason they're saying they do is because that way there's something in their way and they get a better lie.
Yeah.
You know? Because it's very difficult to be like telling someone like, no, you wouldn't actually run up like that.
Yeah.
Because people could have different angles of their run up, right? And so if you're like, oh, if I go this way in my run up, this gets in my way. Now I get a free lie. So that's where it comes in. But all right, enough with the rules.
Boom. There you have it. There's the rule section. You know, maybe I'll bring back the make that call segment on Grip Lock this season. I haven't done it in probably like 4 months. That was always a fun segment.
What the heck? I like that segment.
I haven't done it in a long time. I'll bring it back. Maybe I'll bring it back and just surprise Trevor on Monday. He just won't expect
it. He won't even know it's coming.
Yeah. But that's going to wrap up for all the topics, but you're out in Vegas prepping for the Las Vegas Challenge. What are your plans for... Because you're out there, I mean, you got, what, a week and a half? Close to it?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Virginia might have been one of the worst places to move for off-season training. It is what it is. I want to go back and screenshot the text of where you were very adamant of like, oh no, it never snows here.
It very rarely
snows.
We've
just gotten snow. Like not just, we haven't just gotten snow multiple times. We've gotten it to where it's like snow's been on the ground for days.
Yeah. That never happens.
Which is why
you brought a lot of bad luck this winter. Cause so you experienced December. December is like a normal Lynchburg winter. Where it's like you go out for like 3 or 4 days in a row, and it's like, oh, it's cold. And then it's 50 on the weekends. And you're like, oh, okay. It's back to being warm. And then January came and it's been an actual winter. Like it's been snowy, it's been cold, there's been ice on my window every morning. I'm not used to even defrosting my car in Lynchburg. Normally that happens a few times a year. And I gotta do it every morning right now. You brought bad luck upon us. That's what happened.
That made my decision pretty easy to come out here a little earlier. Luckily, my buddy lives out here, so I'm able to crash at his place. But yeah, I just played a course. It was kind of fun to play because it was, I want to say, a month or two after I started playing disc golf. So like almost 2 years ago, I came out and played this course with a bunch of my Frisbee buddies. And it's always fun to go back and play courses after you've like gotten a lot better. So I played that course real quickly out here, obviously before debate night. But yeah, my plans this week are, you know, spend a lot of time in the field. Discs do travel differently when you're throwing in 70, 80 degree weather than 40 degree weather when you have all those jackets and stuff on. So spend a lot of time out in the fields, dial in a couple new discs to make sure I have solid backups and stuff, because there is some water on these courses. And then because they're all courses, I'm going to try over the next couple of days to get out there and play a little bit on some of the courses. And then they have, I think this is different than in years past, they have scheduled times for pro or for players on courses. So if you're getting in, let's say on Monday, and you've got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they're allowing you to go out early in the morning and play whatever course you want, but like they're blocking it off to where it's like from 10 to 4. Like if you're an MPO, you can only be on this course on Monday, and you can only be on this course on Tuesday. So my goal is to, obviously you play the end of a course twice. So I'm obviously going to try to get as much reps as I can on that course. But I also want the factory store. I felt like I did decent on. But the first course, I don't think I played nearly as well as I should have, which I think is the, what is that one called?
I don't even remember.
I don't even know. I can't believe, I don't even know how I remembered factory store, but the first course is I think the first one we play as well. And I want to make sure I get off to a good start. So yeah, just trying to figure it out. Obviously a lot of the shots I watched my first round last year, Gatekeeper, filmed that round. So I got to watch me play last year and I kind of see what I was doing on some holes. My strategy is probably gonna be a lot different on a lot of these holes this year. Especially now that I'm starting to dial in this forehand more. But yeah, I'm excited to be out here. It looks to be decent weather. It's going to be obviously chilly in the mornings out here a little bit. And potentially some wind. We might have one windy round. It looks like the wind is going to die down when the tournament comes around. But the next couple of days, you're looking at 15, 20, 25 miles per hour out here. So I might film some rounds that'll go up on my channel and Foundation's channel. So be on the lookout for those.
Sweet. Sweet. Yeah, we'll have to check in again with you next week on debate night once you have a week of practice at Vegas to see your final strategy going in. One other thing, final thing that came up this week is we've officially announced the Bogey Bro Battles. We're going to Dallas March 17th through the 20th. And Brody, we're playing against some of the Easy Three guys, which is, you know, your group.
My old stomping grounds.
Yeah, you regularly played against. So I got to know your official pick. We're playing them at BBO and 2.0, Woods at Trinity, whatever that course is. Who are you taking? Trevor and I, or are you taking them on their home course?
Well, so there's a lot of scrambling going on right now with the Easy Three guys because the two people that I think would be the best competition for you on that course, Phil wants to caddy for me in Belton.
Mm.
So he's kind of like up in the air now of like, well, am I caddying for you? Or am I going up and doing this? And then the other guy, Sean, is a firefighter.
Oh.
So him getting off work is not like a guarantee all the time. So right now there is a little bit of commotion of what's going on over there. I will say you guys probably have a better chance of beating the Easy Three guys at that course than you do if you went to like a McCord, Bill Allen, some of these smaller pitch and putt courses where doubles these guys, you know, you go up against the likes of Bear, Johnny's apparently gotten really good as well. You're looking at a team that can shoot 15, 16 under par.
Yeah, we knew better. We knew better than to challenge Bear at a course like that. We learned our lesson.
Bear, he gets his putting going. Watch out. So I'm going to go ahead and say, are you guys going to get a practice round, or are you playing it just, again, first time?
They're showing up. They also said they're going to put it in the gold layout. They said they talked to the course.
Well, yeah, they have to play
gold layout. I don't even know what that means. I don't know if that's what we played it in, but.
Yeah, we played in the gold layout because, like, the third shot was that sixth shot on the peninsula.
That's yeah, the under gold the water. Layout. Okay, sick.
Under the water, yeah. That's the gold layout. If it's Sean and Phil versus you guys, I got Sean and Phil. If Sean and Phil aren't in the mix and it's Johnny and someone else, I'll probably take you guys.
Heck yeah. All right. There we go. The other two people you don't know, we're going to play them at Harry Myers in the afternoon. If you're in the Dallas area and you want to check that out, more information can be found. We have our Facebook event up in the Foundation Nation Facebook group, which if you're not a part of that, you got to get a part of that. But there you have it. That's this week's show, unless Brody has something else he wants to bring up. Any other topics I missed?
Anyone, I want to hear from Silas and maybe the YouTube chat real quick. Any advice? I'm about to go work out for the first time in a Planet Fitness. Any advice out there? Oh, Silas, I'll take your unsolicited advice, and anyone in the chat that has advice.
Don't set off the lung alarm.
Hunter, is that where you work out right now?
I mean, I haven't went in like a week and a half, but that's where I was going.
Oh,
yeah.
What are you doing, man?
But, hey, Silas, that's enough.
What are you doing?
Okay, that's enough. That's enough. All right.
Has Trevor been going?
No, that's what threw me off schedule. Trevor stopped going, and then I'd lost my accountability partner, and next thing you know, I'm sitting on my couch eating ice cream.
What are you doing?
Everyone needs an accountability partner.
Well, see, I can't provide much advice, though, because I go at 5 in the morning, and there's no one in there. It's dead.
Okay, someone says Ezra-style sleeveless.
Yeah, so, I was going to say, I think what you need to do is you need to establish dominance early. Get in, rip the sleeves off your shirt, take just a raw shot of protein powder. That way everyone knows this guy's crazy, I don't mess with him. And then you're free. You're home free.
I think me and Ezra are lifting on Thursday. We might have to do an Instagram live.
There you go.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I'm going to, after tour, it's going to be kind of weird because I'm going to actually get, normally you just kind of want to maintain through the tour, but I don't think I'm going to do that.
I was going to say, someone said to not pull a muscle, so don't do that.
Well, I mean, if it happens, it happens.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. But no, yeah, thanks everyone for watching tonight. Appreciate it. Make sure you guys are subscribed to the YouTubes and check us out on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. All the people, do we have a decent amount of people watching on Facebook?
There's a few people watching on Facebook. I think it'll get bigger over there.
Okay, yeah. So Facebook's an option now too to watch live. But yeah, thanks so much everyone tuning in. Hunter, Silas, thank you guys. Appreciate you. Sorry for making a little bit of a hassle early on.
Hey, it worked out. It worked out.
I mean, I'm literally in probably the worst spot ever to do this because I've literally just been staring at people eating yogurt. There's a yogurt land right in front of me, and I'm just watching all these kids just chowing down on delicious yogurt candies, and I just know I can't do that, and I have to go lift.
Yeah, so hopefully that car battery isn't dead, man.
No, I'm good.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
This car smells like weed, so I'm trying to like air it out.
There you go.
That's what you get for renting a car in Vegas. You're just gonna get weed cars.
I mean, it makes sense. That's fair. All right, there you have it. That's this week's show. We'll be back maybe the same time, maybe a little earlier. Tuesday night, though, we'll be back same place here on Facebook and on YouTube, or if you're listening to us the next day on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those audio platforms. Thank you. Leave us a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We really appreciate each and every one of you, and we'll talk to you all next week.